You know, as a Boise State alum, I am beyond honored and blessed to bring on the athletic director of the university, Jeremiah Dickey, to the show. When Jeremiah first took the helm at Boise State as the athletic director, I, along with many others that I know, were, I mean, apprehensive is probably the best word to put it, because, see, we were excited and we were hopeful that this new athletic director would be able to really change the direction of the ship, so to speak, and navigate the tough waters during the COVID era and all the other tough waters that we were about to experience with the transfer portals and NIL and all the things that come with it. But we were apprehensive. We didn't know exactly what was going to happen. And Jeremiah Dickey has taken the bull by the horns, quite literally. He's built an amazing staff. He is been extremely involved with the community. He has the fans rallying behind him, and his programs are seeing the fruits of his labor and the labor of his staff members and everyone else that's behind the scenes doing the work. And today we get to learn what it's like to be an athletic director at a Division I university. He's going to talk to us about the struggles and the wins that he's experienced and the things that they go through for the non-revenue generating sports, the way that they utilize football to try to help trickle down to the other sports, the leadership qualities that he has and what his faith means to him and what his purpose is here. It's a very, very intriguing discussion, and I would encourage you guys to take notes. I'm just so grateful for his willingness to join the show. And if you guys would do me a favor, hit that follow button. If you're listening to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, hit the subscribe button, right, or whatever podcast platform that you're on. But if you're listening to this on YouTube, hit the follow button so we can build the YouTube platform as well. I hope you guys enjoy this episode of the Game Time Guru. So,
what time is it?
Game time!
This is the Game Time Guru podcast, where I interview sports figures from all over the world to help deliver a panoramic view on sports. So whether you're a former athlete, one of the crazies, or simply a casual sports fan, this is the perfect show for you as we peel back the curtains and learn from our guests every single week. I'm your host, Shane Larson, and I'm helping you see sports through a different lens. What's up, everyone? Welcome out to another episode of the Game Time Guru podcast. And I apologize for anybody who's noticing my voice a little raspy. I was coaching. It was our first club basketball tournament this last weekend. So at the time of this recording, I don't think I was well conditioned for the coaching world yet. That happens to me every football season too. First game of the football season, if I'm at a game, I end up with no voice afterwards because you have to condition yourself as a fan. So that's where I'm at right now. But beyond ecstatic for this opportunity to bring on our guest today. I had the opportunity, as you guys heard in the introduction, I had an opportunity to listen to Jeremiah Dickey as a guest speaker at the Athletic Leadership Conference that Boise State put on in the summer of 2023. And I was there in attendance, and it was really, really cool for me to hear. I've always been a fan of Jeremiah Dickey as the athletic director at Boise State, and I've been a fan of his. I know a lot of the fans are fans of his, but then hearing you speak was just amazing. So I'm just beyond ecstatic to be able to interview you and get a little bit more insight as to what it's like to be an athletic director at Division I University. So ladies and gentlemen, joining us is Jeremiah Dickey, athletic director of Boise State University. Thank you for joining the show, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I've been looking forward to this.
Oh man, it's an honor and a privilege to have you here. So here's the thing. I told some of my coworkers who we're all Boise State alum, and we all chat about, you know, the sports programs and stuff. We're all big fans and whatnot, and they were so stoked. And everyone that I spoke with, this is no less than 10 people at work, wanted me to make sure that you knew that from a fan's perspective and from an alumni perspective, how much they love you for just who you are, is like your presence on social media, who you are as a human being, a nice Christian man who understands his beliefs and he sticks to his morals and ethics, and just someone who's done well for the program. So I'm stating that first so I don't forget it, because everybody said that, all right? So, man, and I agree 100% with every one of them. You know, Jeremiah, when you came to Boise State, one of the biggest questions I have for you is, like, the differences for, like, an athletic director from Boise State University compared to maybe a major university, maybe a Power Five or something. Was the, like, we're talking budgets, for the athletics, the community itself. I just want to compare that to maybe that of a Power Five and some of the hurdles you might have to go through with being an athletic director here as compared to maybe a major university.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of us are dealing with similar challenges. You know, I don't care whether you're at Baylor in my case and or Boise State, we all need more, right? There's a reason why realignment and, you know, all the chaos of our industry is happening. And I think we all, you know, I don't know if there's an AD out there who says, oh no, we have enough. And so that's similar. And look, we're set up very similar, if not the same to many of the Power Four now. You know, where probably the differences lie, you know, our expectations here compared to some of the Power Fours are also the same. It's the resources in general that are challenging. And that's not just the dollars, that's staffing, you know, that's your facilities. And ultimately, which leads to more opportunities to monetize. That's how you serve your student athletes. You know, coming into a place like Boise State, where we did not have a full-time nutritionist, you know, that's something that the Power Four were well ahead of the curve. Not all of them, but many of them. And so in general, you know, I felt like I was well positioned for a place like this. I wanted to be somewhere where there were high expectations, similar to, say, the Power Four, where you have national championship aspirations, you know, in your sport programs. And I think my job as an athletic director is, you know, very similar to what those, you know, men and women are navigating in those conferences. You know, and I think that's the opportunity for us, you know, because, and you've heard me say this a lot, unrealistic expectations produce epic results. You know, our expectations here don't necessarily align with the necessary support. And that was low hanging fruit. And that's why we've dedicated so much time, energy, and effort to, you know, monetizing our operations, professionalizing our operations, you know, pushing six game, six sellouts and selling out Extra Mile. And, you know, because every dollar matters and every dollar that we bring in, we are putting back into the department and into serving our staff, student athletes, and supporters.
Man, that's the stuff that I knew was going to be gold here, because when I heard you speak at the Athletic Leadership Conference, I was like, dude, this guy is so well-spoken, and these little tidbits of information is what like everybody needs to hear, especially those who are on my platform who have been listening for the last 7 years. They want to hear that stuff. That's insightful. Yeah. It gives us a new perspective on things, and it gives us a little bit, I would say, almost like empathy for those who like just don't fully understand. Like, everyone's going through it. We get a little perspective. Grass isn't always greener over here. Everyone's kind of going through similar things. Right. It's just sometimes there's different hurdles. Now, you were talking about like every dollar counts. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, Jeremiah, was in regards to coaching. You know, one of the problems, as I've been in this industry from the media perspective, I've been running the show for 7.5 years, talking to different athletes and everyone from all over the globe, coaches and everyone. You're the first athletic director that I've actually had on the show, which is really cool. But one of the problems we see at schools like Boise State is, sure, the head coach can get a pretty high paying job, but it's hard to keep assistant coaches. And the thing that we've always discussed was the assistant coaches are actually, like, let's just say for football, for example, an assistant coach is really what the skill position players are going for, because they're not going to be hanging with the head coach all day long. They're with their offensive coordinator or their quarterback's coach and whatnot. And it's just the nature of the game. Some schools can afford to pay higher dollars for assistant coaches than us. And so there seems to be a little bit more of a turnover for the assistants, so to speak. And I'm just curious, like, I just want the athletic director's perspective on this and how you go about navigating that when we're talking about taking care of the student athletes, like you said, but like, how do we make sure, you know, we keep them bought in, even though there is a potential for turnover on the assistant coach perspective?
Yeah. You know, money obviously is a major driver in our industry, whether it should or shouldn't, that's a whole other conversation. You have to be so locked in on your why, you know, and this for me specifically, and obviously I'm not an assistant coach and more probably defined as a head coach. Money's never been a driver. You know, you want to be somewhere where you can win championships, you compete at the highest level, that your family, because that is a priority for many of our people here, those that have families with them, you know, a significant other, etc. You know, this community is amazing. So when we look at hiring, you know, you control what you can. You know, I'm not necessarily concerned about coaches, any coach leaving, or staff. And I don't say that in a negative way. I want what they want. I don't want people here who I'm having to buy loyalty for. You know, that does not produce or allow us to meet the expectations of serving everyone that we're responsible for. You want people to be here for the right reasons. And there are many cases that assistant coaches I have conversations with, our coaches have conversations with, that we're telling them, hey, this is a good opportunity for you. You know, you need to look at that, whether it's to get closer to home, whether it's to elevate them so they can have a chance to become a head coach in his or her sport. You know, that becomes part of the conversation. And that ties into people are our greatest asset. You know, now, ultimately, you know, we do need to pay more. That goes back to how we're monetizing. And you've seen since I've been here, I don't think there's an assistant coach or head coach who has not gotten more. That's just the reality of the business. That's also the reality of living in this unbelievable community that a lot of people moved in during COVID and the cost of living skyrocketed. It used to be a competitive advantage for us. Now it's becoming more challenging. Now, at the end of the day, that puts pressure on the system for us to find solutions to what that looks like, whether it's partnering with people within the community to create housing opportunities or finding creative ways, you know, additional ancillary benefits of, you know, whatever it is, courtesy cars or country club memberships, or, you know, you're constantly trying to improve your situation. And, you know, you look at what we're paying our offensive and defensive coordinator. You can be an offensive and defensive coordinator at the Power Four level, and on average, they're probably making what we're paying our head football coach. You know, the numbers are it's astronomical. Like I can't compete with that. And so you have to find other ways. And, you know, for me, I'm a relational person, and you know, that's important to me. And I'm going to have those conversations, and we're going to talk through that. And we realize that for some of these individuals, we're limited on the time that we have them. And what can we do in the meantime? Because you're also looking at this boomerang effect. At some point, someone will come back. That whether that's for a head coach job or a position coach wanting to be an offensive or defensive coordinator, and they enjoyed their experience. So it's not in our interest to view it from a negative standpoint. You know, I try to see positive in everything that we do. And there's a reality to this that every cycle, because of the level we're operating at, you know, in the industry, every cycle we are fighting to hold on to our people, and you're trying to beat other teams to the punch. But we understand that what I can offer for an assistant, someone else is going to be able to double, if not triple it. And, you know, and money is a driving force, and that's not a bad thing. I fully understand that. And so, I'm not sure if I fully answered your question, but, like, you know, when that becomes a topic, you know, with our donor base and those supporters and the different opportunities we're looking at, like the North End Zone facility, or, you know, it's about the student athletes. It's also about our staff, and it's not just our assistant coaches. It's my senior associate ADs. It's our associate ADs. You know, we are doing an amazing job, and I should say they are doing an amazing job. They are being recognized, and that's a good thing. If someone's coming after your people, it means you're doing well. And I would rather have that than the opposite. You know, when you're having to have an uncomfortable conversation of this isn't working. And so I want good people. I want them to have those opportunities. I want to be able to compete and fight for them. And we've been able to do that. Even getting a guy like Stacey Collins to come from Penn State, you know, back to, you know, Boise State, which he was here before. It was because of the experience. It was because of the people. It was because of someone like Spencer, who he appreciates and respects. That means a lot. We've been able to hold on to our basketball staff. Those guys could go off and not only become head coaches, they could get higher level assistant positions in the industry, but they've chosen to stay because of the respect and appreciation for Leon and the experience here. And, you know, and many of them call our donors friends, you know, and so that connectivity, you know, which I think is maybe a little different from your previous question of the Power Four versus where we're currently at. You know, we are so connected to people and have to be. And yeah, does that add more work? And, you know, but that's just who we are. And that's something, as long as I'm the leader here, is going to continue to be important. And we're going to win some, we're going to lose some. But I always, you know, look at what's next. I can't sit back and cry over spilt milk. It is what it is. And as soon as someone tells us, it's thank you, we love you, if I could ever help you, but what's next? And we're off to the next person, and we're going to go out and find the next best thing. And sometimes, and in many cases, we get better. And if we can continue that cycle, it's going to pay dividends for us down the road.
No, I absolutely love that. One of the things that it just keeps ringing here, and what I've noticed just from the outside looking in before this, is your positive attitude. It's a positive attitude as a leader, which is essential to keep a positive attitude and move forward. I mean, there's so many things you mentioned. This is what's crazy is, like, when we were in the athletic leadership conference, you talked about the transfer portal and, like, the hiccups that kind of caused, and you had to, like, work through that, because that's a relatively new thing in the college athletics landscape for everybody. And so as an athletic director, you have to deal with that. And then you're also dealing now with name, image, and likeness being a motivating factor. And like you said, for the coaches, you know, money is a driving factor, but now for the players, that can also be that. And there's just so much that shifts the entire landscape. It shifts recruiting. It shifts everything. Is there anything that you could give as far as advice that you've had from coming in here when you did, and then dealing with the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness on top of that, from the athlete's perspective, that you could give advice for, like, any other ADs that might be struggling with that same thing and being like, okay, well, how did you take your positive attitude and find a positive out of all of this so that you could make it work?
Yeah, which I've said publicly before, it's never as bad as it seems, never as good as it seems. You know, my job is to stay as neutral as possible, and I have to be what others need me to be. And sometimes that means I have to believe more than others. And, you know, it doesn't mean it always works out. You know, I'm not perfect. And I think that's just the reality of our industry right now. You know, there are good days, there are bad days, you know, but how we approach it and our attitude is a big part of that, is going to determine how you come out of it. You know, and if I sit here and drop my head and look, there are moments, you know, if I'm being real, like, I'm human, you know, there are moments that I'm in this office and it's late, you know, and, you know, it's emotional and you're upset about something, or, you know, but my job is for everyone to get what they need out of me as much as they possibly can. And a lot of that happens behind closed doors for me. You know, what I am to my team, what I am to our student athletes, hopefully, and our staff and Bronco Nation in general, is that positive reinforcement that we are going to be okay. And I think for ADs coming up in the industry, this job was hard enough on a good day. You know, now navigating portals and everything else, it's just something else. You know, it's what probably on a different level, and I'm not saying it's apples to apples, but, you know, now we're trying to charter more sports, and that there's increased costs, and there's nutritionists, and there's game times, and games changing from Saturday to Thursday and Friday, and 0 week games. And, you know, that, like, there's always change. It change is inevitable, you know, and the only constant is how we approach it. And, you know, if I sit back here and complain, or any AD complains about it, you know, nothing good comes from it. Now, are we in a challenging position right now? Is it uncomfortable? Absolutely. It's chaos. You know, just getting back from the Final Four, I mean, that was one of the number one topics that I heard from every AD, coach, et cetera, that I connected with, was everyone's tired. And, you know, and so it's forcing us to get creative and innovative, whatever you want to call it, in how we're going to approach these things. And that's us defining our own expectations and looking at it as an opportunity to say, all right, we know it's changing. It's already happened. How do we position ourselves now to put our best foot forward? And the only way to do that is to try. And there is no guarantee in anything that we propose. And that's how I'm approaching it. And I think our team has really adapted to that and embraced it in many ways, and our coaches specifically. And that's why I think we haven't been hit by the transfer portal as much, you know, and it doesn't mean we won't. That's why we've been able to recruit at a high level. That's why we continue to win at a high level. Is there always more to be done? Yes. But, you know, I think it starts with that attitude. And if you already approach it from a negative mentality, you've lost. You know, I can't guarantee you that we're going to win because I'm positive. You know, but that gives me more of a chance than if I approached it and throw my hands up and say, you know, I have no control over this. And, you know, and maybe it's the perception of control that I live with, you know, but, you know, it's gotten me here, you know, and I've been this way my whole career. And, you know, my goal and job is to be my authentic self. And I think that's positioned us well for present day and future.
I love that, man. I mean, it's so cool to see your leadership style. It's contagious. And I hope that people take away from this interview something like just the attitude behind it. It's easy to say it. It's another thing to actually do it. And you have consistently showed that. Now, you know, Jeremiah, I was talking to a guy named Pete Steinberg on my show just a week ago. I was interviewing him, and he was the Women's World Cup rugby coach for the World Cup and the Olympics. And now he's a corporate leader. He's a great dude. And he wrote a book called Leadership Shock. And one of the things he talked about, the difference between high-level athletes and high-level leadership roles in any corporation or organization, was that high-level athletes actually, they have very similar traits. They want to grow. They want to continue to get better. They want to keep their team accountable, but they want to be a good teammate and leader and all this stuff. But the athletes have this, they have the ability to recover and rest from when they put in all this hard work and they're doing all that. But then they get to rest and recover so that they can continue to compete at a high level. And he was mentioning how, like, in corporate leadership or any organization where you're a leader in a top position like yourself, oftentimes the rest isn't a focal point and it causes struggles. And you just mentioned athletic directors talking about being, you know, tired and it's exhausting. There's chaos all the time. And from a leadership perspective, this is more of a leadership question for you. I would like to get your advice from your perspective. How do you find rest? And how do you find a way to recover so that you can continuously put in that 100% effort that you're doing?
Well, I'm never a finished product. And that's something, quite honestly, I struggle heavily with. You know, I'm not just the athletic director. I'm a husband, a father. You know, my faith's important to me. I'm a Christian. And you know, last week, for example, you know, I'm traveling with gymnastics and I'm going to Final Four. I'm back this week and everything's stacked. And then I'm out of town next week. And you're just constantly going. And, you know, I was watching something and I can't remember who was saying it. At various points in time, you have to live an unbalanced life. And that doesn't mean 100% of the time, but I'm in a time right now where I'm unbalanced. And, you know, you do your best to find those moments. And for me, it's connecting with my family, you know, so whether it's taking my kids on a, you know, like this year, I told each kid, I have three kids, Emerson, Elijah, and Easton. And I told, and the youngest one is five. So I said, look, I'm going to take you to a basketball game. That's much easier, 2 hours, you know, versus football, but on the road. And I took each of them on the road with me. And I can't tell you how meaningful that was for me, you know, as opposed to sitting in a hotel, you know, by myself and to have one of my kids with me and to see, you know, for donors and others to see my staff, to see me, you know, as human, it was really important. And those are moments that I try to take advantage of and taking my family to Dayton, you know, I try to take my wife to different meetings and, you know, for them, maybe it's a vacation. For me, maybe, you know, not as much. But that does bring me some peace and it bridges the gap, you know, from 1 week to the next. And, you know, I need to do a better job of finding time for myself, you know, but, you know, there's a lot of guilt that comes with that, you know, husband guilt, dad guilt, you know, that, you know, my personality is not limited to just this office where my goal is to be what everyone needs me to be. My goal at home is also for them, you know, for me to be what they need me to be. And my biggest fear is, you know, 5-10 years from now when, you know, right now my kids love me and want to be around me, you know, they'll always love me, I hope, but, you know, they may not want to be around me 10 years from now, is to try to take advantage of those moments. And I get so much peace and I'm so grateful for those moments that, you know, I don't need to go golf by myself. I don't, you know, go on vacation alone. I, you know, you try to take advantage of certain times. You know, one of the things I've started to do, which is, you know, it seems so insignificant and it's small, but when I go, you know, when I drive in from home to the office, in the morning specifically, I have my coffee and I don't have the radio on and I try not to make calls and I just sit in silence. And a lot of times I pray and, you know, when it's my time to, you know, before the day gets chaotic, is to just sit there in my own thoughts and to try to find that inner peace that, you know, allows me to get through some of the, you know, the challenging times of the day. And, you know, you find those moments and there's cycles in our industry, and right now the portal is creating more chaos where, you know, the portal is about to open again. And so whatever we got through initially, we're having to do it again. And, you know, and it's holding on to your players. And that's a big part of our culture and, you know, and the consistency and the team aspect, you know, but over the course of a week, there are moments, and it may just be for 20 minutes before my next meeting, you know, that I'll sit in here and I'll maybe read a leadership book or I'll call my mom or dad or, you know, and just find those times that I can be human and not perfect. And I don't do it nearly enough, but, you know, it's needed because it does weigh on you. And that's the piece that I probably am still getting used to as an AD. When you're number two, no one cares, you know, about you. Like, no one wants to talk to you or do podcasts or, you know, like they don't care what your thoughts are. You know, now because of the role, and that's just part of it. And my wife reminds me, I chose this. No one's making me do this. And so she brings good perspective, and other people in my life pour into me, and friends that I've created in this community that will say, hey, let's just go have lunch. And I'm so grateful for those moments because my friends don't ask me about, you know, who's starting at quarterback or who's, you know, they don't want any, they just want to see me and they want to hear what's going on in my life. And that means a lot to me. And I think that's a big part of this.
That's so awesome, man. I think that's super insightful. I would encourage anyone who's listening to this right now to rewind that and maybe take some notes if you didn't, because I think we all, to some degree, can probably do better at that. We're in a world with a lot of noise, just various industries, right? You're in the athletic world, but like there's different industries where it's so much chaos, so much noise. Social media is out there. There's so much noise. Yeah. But like you just saying, like driving into work, if it's 10 minutes of just being in silence, like some people are scared to be in silence these days with their thoughts. That's just a thing. We're not used to doing that, but that can be really huge. And for you as a Christian and like praying and quote unquote, putting on the armor of God before you get into work and before you go into the quote unquote battle, you know, like it's just kind of those cool concepts. I think that's really awesome, man. And I commend you for that. And we're all getting better. And I think that's cool. Yeah. That's the beauty of being a human being, right? There's only one perfect person on this earth, I believe, and we're not him. So we're all trying to be more like him, but we're not him. So, you know, Jeremiah, if you look at your tenure so far at Boise State specifically, what would you say is like your biggest win? Whether that's something that happened in like an athletic accomplishment from one of the programs, if it was something that you and your staff accomplished, what would be your biggest win as an athletic director so far?
First and foremost, I would say my staff in general. You know, coming here out of COVID and technically we were still in COVID, and you know, accepting this job sight unseen and getting to the office and half the office being on furlough, and you know, it was really challenging, and you get to know people, and you know, you create this vision and direction, and you provide these seats on the bus, so to speak, and everyone had a seat. And ultimately, over the course of time, people realize this isn't what they want, and that's okay. My goal was to find Broncos. I want to find Broncos, people that want to be here, and that's important to me. And you know, in 3 years, to see the transition we've had and the experience that I've been able to bring in, and how this team has come together, and it finally dawned on me. Probably at the end of last semester, going through that football change was difficult, but I can't tell you how many members of my team came in and checked on me or, you know, just put their head down and went to work and helped. And when I was navigating a search, and, you know, I'm not one of those ADs that just delegates everything and, you know, there's responsibilities, but them coming to me and saying, hey, let me take that from you and let me help with this. And, that meant so much to me, and people, like I said earlier, people are our greatest asset, and to see how far we've come in 3 years and completely transformed this department and got people to buy in, and not necessarily that they all had to be like me, you know, the diversity of thought and experiences and, you know, levels of ownership, that's where, you know, and quite honestly, I get way too much credit. You know, our team is outstanding, and I'm so grateful for them. And that's what drives the, you know, the change that maybe Bronco Nation is seeing, and the in you know, investments into the staff, student athletes, and supporters. And so I would say the staff and how the culture of the department has grown in that time. And that means the world to me. That's more important than the wins and losses in many ways, because, you know, you can't control that in a lot of ways, but the staff and how we show up, and that's important. The other piece is, you know, just Bronco Nation and the resources. You know, when I'm told I can't do something, that fires me up. And my first 6 months, I met with a lot of donors, a lot of sponsors, a lot of members of our community, our whole department. I met with every single staff member, and I just questioned things. You know, why have we done it this way? Why have we done it that way? You know, what about this facility? We did facility walkthroughs, and very quickly this vision, you know, this path forward was laid out for me. And that tied into our What's Next initiative and our Playbook for Success in terms of our facility assessments and a lot of the progress that we made. But I couldn't do all that without Bronco Nation embracing it. And, you know, when you look at what we've been able to fundraise, you know, and people telling me we can't, you know, get to 10,000 donors, we're at 7,000 now. When I got here, we were at 3,500. And that's a testament to our BA team. That's a testament to everyone who stepped up. And, you know, you got to spend money to make money. And yes, I know that's probably controversial in college athletics, because that's not necessarily the narrative that's been out there, but that is the reality. And whether people like it or not, you have to invest. And in our case, there were a lot of deferred maintenance things that we needed to go out and do. Lights at facilities, video boards changing out, new turf in an indoor and a lot of this stuff should have been done 10, 20 years ago. And so you chop wood, we identified every need and we went to work. And just because I identify it, just because we put it out there, doesn't mean that it's going to happen. It takes a team, and I needed Bronco Nation to step up. And so whether it's the Blue Collar Club giving $50, like, that matters. Every dollar matters. Or one of these many donors who've given us seven-figure donations, that matters. And it's allowed us to bridge that gap much quicker. And when you take that along with the brand that I inherited and this blue turf and the power of the blue and this blue collar mentality, you can do amazing things. And that's what we've done. And so a lot of credit, and something I'm very proud of, is how Bronco Nation has truly embraced that. And, you know, and like I said, it's not perfect, and you always need more, but we have made so much progress that we're going to get to 10,000 donors. We're going to build this North End Zone facility. We're going to do the Ox Gym. It's going to domino in the east side of the stadium. It's going to domino into Extra Mile. We're going to bring a soccer, you know, closer, you know, to our facility. And, you know, and that's just the mentality. And, you know, and I think we've done enough. If you remember when I first got here, Bronco Nation, there were a lot of naysayers. It's like, oh yeah, you're not the first AD. You're not the first, you know, but what are you supposed to do? You know, I'm not going to let other people define our expectations. I'm going to define them. And that's part of my job. And we're going to go out and do it. And so you take your team and your staff, and you take Bronco Nation, you know, and you take your student athletes and your coaches, and, you know, in 3 years, we've made huge, you know, just leaps and bounds, like, in terms of where we started versus where we are today. And that gives me so much hope in our future and what it looks like, because I still believe we've only scratched the surface.
Oh, I 100% believe that. Here's the deal too, being fully transparent with you, when you first came in, obviously it was at a difficult time in all of college athletics, all of the world, yeah, for that matter. But I was one of those. I used to be a season ticket holder for like 7 years, and for football that is. And then I was just thinking, I'm like, what is he going to be able to do? I felt like they threw you to the wolves almost. And that's what my mentality was. But immediately, like, it was like, Jeremiah, it was an immediate like shockwave that was felt. And so as a business guy myself, I enjoy learning about businesses, entrepreneurship, and all that. I was like, well, okay, he's got the attitude for it, but we don't have the money. And it's almost like you felt all those, like, those comments coming from everybody, and you're like, all right, bet, like, let's see this. And yeah, you did it. Like, look at, and like you just mentioned, 3,500 to 7,000 donors. Like, we didn't have the money, but guess what? It's still coming in. We need to improve, but it's still coming in. And you just answered one of my questions that I had. Like, it dominoes. I love that You mentioned like that's how you're prioritizing things. You got to start here. We're going to fix this. That will trickle into the east side of the stadium, for so to speak. Like, you've already made massive improvements to like the football game day experience. That's a big thing from, you know, fans. Like, what's the game day experience like as compared to other places? And you've already improved there, but all these other things will trickle there. The extra mile arena will trickle. Soccer will trickle over. Like, it'll trickle, but you got to get that momentum rolling. And that's what you've done. I think it's awesome. And I'm telling you, like, just watching you, I'm mesmerized at your leadership and the ability to execute. Some people talk a big game. Some people execute. You do both. And I think it's amazing. To two questions left to respect your time here. One, in regards to the non-revenue generating sports, right? At Boise, most colleges, it's usually just football that's generating the revenue for pretty much everything. Some of them basketball will trickle into, but the majority of college athletics is mainly just football, right? And so I don't think people realize the financial component to that. Like, there's still scholarships that are given to other sports. How do they pay for those? Like, you know, to keep the lights on an extra mile, you got to keep the lights on for the women's and the men's basketball and anything else that's going on over there. Like, it's the same thing. I remember at touring the stadium in Dallas for AT&T Stadium, they mentioned the reason they were building a new facility for the high school football was because it cost them just as much for electricity to host a high school football game there as it does for a Dallas Cowboys game, because they got to turn the lights on. And so, like, there's little things like that. I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, that actually makes total sense. They're like, yeah, but we're not making any money off of like any of the concessions or any of the ticket sales. So anyway, from the non-revenue generating sports, I want to learn from an athletic director, like, anything that you can give as far as advice, like, how do you even budget for those, right? And you came in during the COVID era, like, where, I mean, there's some people that were frustrated about baseball. There were some people frustrated about the wrestling component. I mean, there's obviously the discussions that are out there, but like, how do we even budget for all of those? Cause they're not cheap to run those, but we still need those athletes to be here. You know, it's a big piece of our culture. So, like, just curious on that.
Well, I think it goes back to, you know, what you said about football. You know, you plan the work the plan. You know, everything we've done as a department, you know, the fan base or Bronco Nation may see it as one decision. I see it as 10. You know, I'm trying to get to an ultimate goal, and to do it, you got to take one step. And so I look at last season, maybe one of the most frustrating for Bronco Nation, that obviously ended very differently than maybe how it started. I just, one of the crazier seasons I've ever been a part of. And you look at six games, people showed up. They showed up. Even when we weren't winning by whatever game, or we weren't winning by enough, and, you know, they still showed up for games that traditionally maybe they wouldn't have. And that's what dominoes into all of our other sport programs. And, you know, that was part of the plan. Six games, six sellouts is intentional. Yes, it does fund the football program, but it also funds everything else. But in the meantime, we have other things at play, like soccer lights. Soccer lights wasn't just student athlete experience. That was a big part of it, but it was also fan experience. You look at soccer and its attendance, and it skyrocketed last year. We sold out soccer matches to the point now we're looking at adding more bleachers. Now, in the whole grand scheme of things, we're not selling tickets at the same level as we are at football, but every dollar matters. And so if you can maximize your football opportunity and at minimum invest into these other sport programs and create a better fan experience where you are selling more tickets. And we also had introduced season tickets for all sports that are fan facing. There was intentionality behind that. That becomes your pipeline. That's where we go back to in terms of our fundraising and our enhancement funds for soccer, for volleyball, for gymnastics. That's important. And so it's never just one decision. It's a combination of all of the above that ultimately leads to success. And I've taken an approach that we're not just a football program. Yes, that's where our brand has been, and that's where we've had a tremendous amount of success, and very grateful for that. But why can't we be a top soccer program? Why can't we be a top volleyball program or gymnastics or softball? And part of that is our investment into that experience. And so taking football and moving a very small video board in football to softball, where it creates a better experience, paid dividends for us. And then you add lights. And then you get to host the Mountain West tournament. And now what's next is going to be a new field because the irrigation system is broken underneath. And we just had the most precipitation in our history, I think, you know, over the last 5 months. You're always planning for what's next. You can't ever stop. And are you ever going to have enough? Can I, you know, our goal is to always be top three, and we're grinding and striving for that in terms of salaries, in terms of budgets, you know, and trying to create those experiences. But, you know, I believe it can be done. And that's a big part of the overall plan, you know. And, you know, why can't we monetize basketball differently? We hit all-time highs in ticket sales, in attendance. You know, at some point I need to figure out, because there's a lot of men's basketball games, you know, but I have the 6-game, 6 sellouts, you know, for football. You know, what's reality for us, you know, and the game times and the weeknights, and, you know, basketball can be difficult, but going to 3 tournaments in a row, like, everything counts, everything matters. Everything ties into the grand, you know, goal of funding this department, because we are predominantly self-funded. And so we want to pay a coach more. I have to go find it. We have to go find it. You know, if we want a new court, a new field, a new, you know, sound system, we have to go find it. There's not a money tree, you know? And so that becomes part of the vision and the planning. And that's what our team is consistently working on behind the scenes. And as soon as the season ends, we're already thinking about what's next. And really, prior to the season ending, it's what's worked, what hasn't. Not everything we do is going to work. And then we're going to take what works in other sports and see if it works in gymnastics. And we're going to try to continue to build that up. And the more money you can bring in, the more then you can invest back into your experiences. And that's for everyone involved. So there is no secret sauce to it. You know, if you want it to be a priority, you make it a priority. And we've done that. And, you know, and we're not a finished product, and we're not even close to being where we need to be. But we have made a ton of progress, and that's something that drives the staff and these external pods, and, you know, for them to recognize, yeah, we didn't sell out every basketball game, but we sold out, you know, I think 5, you know, that's huge for us. And we also averaged the most we've ever averaged. And we also had the most people come through those turnstiles ever, you know, and we also just went to our 3rd tournament, and now let's go to our 4th, you know, and that drives the coaches to do more. And you know, so I think I have, you know, I constantly have thoughts of what's next, and, you know, but that's something that I'm really proud of, that, you know, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to take this hand we've been dealt, and whether appropriately or not, or if the expectations are unrealistic or not, we're going to take that hand and we're going to play it to the best of our ability. And, you know, you need people to embrace that, and people have, and, you know, I think we've shown them what could be, and that gives hope, and hope is powerful, and I can sell hope, and, you know, and that's something that I try to do on a daily basis. And that ties into the positive mentality of, we can do it. And I know there's going to be disappointments along the way, but we're going to continue to chop wood, and we're not going to quit. And, you know, and ultimately I do believe we're going to find success in everything that we put our, you know, heart and soul into.
No doubt about that. This is so cool. And just, I noted it down while you were talking. I have my phone out so I can take notes. One of the things you said is just kind of passed over: irrigation systems broken under the field. People, that's what I'm talking about. That's like Jeremiah Dickey and his whole staff have to deal with this type of stuff. That's the things the public doesn't realize, like little things like that. Well, now we got to figure out that situation. So we got probably got to figure out a field.
Those are the things that honestly, you know, and it is, you know, because it's not something that most people care about, or, you know, it's, we're in the customer service business, right? So, you know, people show up and they want the best experience possible. And I hear about the east side of the stadium, and, you know, for my first 2 years, every time it rained, our track locker room flooded. And wow. And we're trying to, you know, it's like, what's wrong with it? And finally we get someone in here and, you know, and they, you know, we're running out every ground ball, and we realize the piping's broken, you know, like 100 yards from where, you know, you could see it, and it's underground and you got to go dig down. And one, that stuff costs money. 2, it does impact the experience of all. It impacts my staff, because I don't have a massive staff. And so, I mean, we had guys here at 1-2 a.m. in the morning on a Saturday night, just trying to, you know, pump water out.
Yeah.
So it does, you don't have fungus. And I mean, those are the things that, you know, they maybe don't tell you that you have to worry about. And maybe I didn't necessarily get to experience fully as someone underneath an athletic director, but you know, yeah, there are those things. And, you know, and the list is endless. And as soon as you get something new, I mean, a video board has an 8 to 10 year lifespan, you know, a field has 10 to 12, maybe, you know, a turf field has 10 to 12, maybe, you know? And so as soon as you get it, you're kind of thinking about, all right, when I have to buy this again, you know, how are we going to do this? And it ties into upkeep and everything else, but there's so much that goes in. And I mentioned my staff earlier. They don't get the credit they deserve. You know, what we hear and it infuriates me. Now I'm always kind, you know, but I get upset. Like we know where the problems are, and, you know, and it is counterproductive for me to be so vocal about them. But when I get the emails late at night after a game, or when I get the social media posts and, you know, people are upset about X, Y, and Z, 99.9% of the time, we know, because we're walking the facility. We see it. We know going into it, and we're just trying to limit it. And, you know, you just do the best you can, and you try to keep everyone's head up in it. And, you know, I tell them, like, you all go, give me the muck. And that's really tied into my social media presence of how do we tell this story, and you know, how do I protect my team in many ways.
Man, I love it. I love everything that you're saying. It's so insightful. The last question I have for you, Jeremiah, as a man of faith, and I know you mentioned it is a big part of just who you are as a human being, and it trickles into who you are as an athletic director as well, and the decisions you make. Do you have a favorite scripture possibly that's an influential one that you'd be willing to share?
You know, I right now, and it's funny, my wife and I just had this conversation, and, you know, getting into the scripture more, and you know, I know that, you know, in general, I know that God brought me here for a reason, and I know that my steps are determined, and, you know, and showing up in faith, you know, and understanding that, you know, His will is going to be done one way or another. And, you know, and trying to find peace in that process is, you know, it's challenging many times. And there are many times that I question God of why, you know, but I also look at, you know, a lot of what my wife and we're in a Bible study group and what we read, and, you know, and it's so obvious, but I don't know if there was one person in the Bible that had an easy path. Not one, including Jesus Christ Himself. And, you know, and it brings me peace, you know, as we just went through Easter, you know, and, you know, Him dying for us, and had done nothing wrong, you know, and, but then rising again. And, you know, and that's something that hits home for me right now. You know, it's life is challenging, and it's, you know, it's not always fun, and it throws a lot at you, but, you know, He will come again. And I know there's peace in that. And, you know, I know our, you know, our victory is not on this earth, you know, and that's something that it keeps me going, because, you know, my job is just to do what He needs me to do, and to be a presence for Him, and to be, this is my ministry, you know, and hopefully to live that out in action, that others can see that, you know, his grace, and, you know, it's something that they can feel, and hopefully my actions, you know, show that.
Appreciate that insight, man. I'll tell you from my perspective, I don't work directly with you by any means, but I can tell that, right? Like, I can tell it shines through you. And I think that's super cool. You said this is your ministry. I think it shows in the work that you do. You have a purpose. You know your purpose. It's more of an eternal divine purpose, but you bring that here to the mortal existence. And I think it's amazing. Like, you can see it go through. And I just commend you for that. And Jeremiah, I just want to say thank you. I want to respect your time. So I'll wrap up and just say thank you for joining the show, man, and being willing to, you know, speak with me or to you. I'm probably just a nobody, right? Like, I'm a Boise State alum. Maybe you've seen me post a couple things here and there. You've heard the podcast, but, like, I truly do appreciate you as a Boise State alum, just someone who's been around here for my entire existence, and just being able to, like, study you as a leader as well has been amazing. So it's an honor to be able to have you on my platform, And yeah, and taking time out of your unbelievably busy schedule already to share your insights is just beyond humbling for me. So thank you so much for doing that. And I wish you all the best, brother. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on. And this is well worth it. And anything I can ever do for you, let me know. And go Broncos.
Go Broncos. I appreciate you, sir. Take care.
Thanks, man.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to another episode of my show. Now, if you could go and do me a favor, head over to iTunes, give me 5 stars, and leave me a review, it would be greatly appreciated. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your support.